Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tera Banachari Ajamuna Tera Banachari Najaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balava Giri Banadari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Ajamuna Tera Banachari Ajamuna Tera Banachari Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan.
Jaya Nitya Lila Pravista Astatara Satasi Simanas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem is a co-host, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Sri Garadha, Sri Vasudeva, Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Sri Radha, Shyam Sunda, Gopa Gopinath, Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Gidu Gaur Ki Jai. Granth Raj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Govinda Ghosh Prabhu Ki Jai. My glasses are there. All right. Without my glasses, I'm useless. This is just a day. Yes, please. Thank you. Devotional service is known as a hoitikya pratiyata, uninterrupted and unmotivated. However, sometimes it's filled with anxiety. I decided not to print out my notes to the class today last night, and anybody that knows me knows I'm nothing without my notes. And then this morning I went to print them, and the printer said, oh, no ink. Okay, so I put a new ink cartridge in. Nope, we don't like this cartridge. You're not printing anything. All right, well, I guess I'll have to do everything on my tablet. So I pick up my tablet. Oh, my tablet's got 6%. All right, this isn't going to make it to a Bhagavatam class. So bring the charger, plug it in, try and get the tablet, and then anyway, leave my glasses somewhere. So I don't know, maybe I'm just not supposed to even be here this morning. We'll let you all decide that after you hear what I have to say. Oh, man, one of those days. And the thing is, in the midst of all of it, oh, I forgot Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 14, text number 36. Maybe. Krishna sometimes has to go to great lengths to make us look like a fool. Not such great lengths in my case. There we go. The sages at Naimisharani never had to deal with us. Of course, they were all Shruti doors. They knew everything. All righty. Thank you very much for putting up with me. All right. Sana prasidatam bhamo. Bhagavan uj anugraha. Vadyasyapyanukampyanam Strinam Deva Satipati Sana Prasidatam Bhamo Bhagavan Ujvanugraha Vadyasyapyanukampyanam Strinam Deva Satipati Sana Prasidatam Bhamo Bhagavan Ujvanugraha Vadyasyapyanukampyanam Strinam Deva Satipati. Please chant. Sa, he, na, with us, prasidatam, be pleased, Bhama, brother-in-law, Bhagavan, the personality of all opulences. Guru, very great. Anugraha, merciful. Vyadasya, of the hunter. Api, also. Anukampyanam, of the objects of mercy. Strinam, of the women. Deva, the worshipable Lord. Satipati, the husband of Sati, the chaste one. Translation. Let him be pleased with us, since he is my brother-in-law, the husband of my sister Sati. He is also the worshipable Lord of all women. He is the personality of all opulences and can show mercy towards women who are excused even by the uncivilized hunters. Purport for Srila Prabhupada. Lord Shiva is the husband of Sati, one of the sisters of Diti. Diti invoked the pleasure of her sister Sati so that Sati would request her husband to excuse her. Besides that, Lord Shiva is the worshipable Lord of all women. He is naturally very kind towards women, on whom even the uncivilized hunters also show their mercy. Since Lord Shiva himself is associated with women, he knows very well their defective nature, and he might not take seriously Diti's unavoidable offense, which occurred due to her faulty nature. Every virgin girl is supposed to be a devotee of Lord Shiva. Diti remembered her childhood worship of Lord Shiva and begged for his mercy. Thus the reason we have none of the kids here today. Om Agyana Timurandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Militam Yinatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachilam Pangulam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Avancha Kaputribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahebacha Putitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhara Srivasati Sri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. Nitya Seva. Bhagavata Nitya Seva. So in this particular verse, there are quite a few points worth noting. The subject matter of Kasyapa and Diti conceiving children at the inappropriate time, and what the result of that is, what's being discussed here, and the mood of repentance that we find in Diti after the fact. So there, but no, yep. Okay, is that better? All right, thank you. I can't do anything right today. So the first point that can be made in this verse is it's mentioned that Shiva is the brother-in-law of Diti, as he's married to Diti's sister Sati. Now in the sixth canto, it tells us that their father, Daksha, had 60 daughters. 60. 60 daughters. Now, that's 60 weddings, 60 dowries, 60 sets of parent-in-laws, so on and so on and so on. But Daksha, because he's one of the main Prajapatis, one of the progenitors of the universe, he could actually execute this particular service. You know, one of the definitions of the word Daksha is one who is expert. And he's expert in arranging all of the services that he has to do, all the different activities he has to perform, of which one is getting 60 daughters married. So he married multiple daughters to the same husbands. This is the breakdown that's given to us in the sixth canto. Daksha gave 10 daughters to Dharma, Yamaraj, 13 daughters to Kasyapa, first 12 and then one additional daughter, 27 daughters to the moon god, and 2 daughters each to Angira, Krishava, and Bhuta. The other 4 daughters were then again given to Kasyapa. And thus Kasyapa received 17 daughters in all in marriage. Now, of course, this was acceptable at that time because of a couple of reasons. One, it's an entirely different age, and this type of arrangement is there, and it was the norm. It was, the way things were done. The second reason is that Kasyapa was actually qualified to have multiple wives, as was Chandra, the moon god, and so on, as it mentions here. And that qualification is quite vast. In our modern times, we don't see that ability. And the third reason was there was a need at this point to propagate the entire universe. So this propagation of the universe fell to these individuals, and it required, you know, a lot of different wives, a lot of different species, a lot of different plants. I mean, there was a lot to be done there. Now, of course, we don't really need to go into mentioning the disastrous results that were there when this attempt at polygamy was tried in our ISKCON history. It's just not there. Prabhupada at one point finally says, I believe it's in the ninth canto, he says, therefore, polygamy in our ISKCON society is not allowed. No qualified men. So in this way, we see that the circumstance surrounding the details of these daughters of Daksha, particularly as the wives of Kasyapa, who we're discussing here, is a completely different scenario and circumstance than what we find today. And as Prabhupada says, one should not imitate, but one should follow the principle. Principle here being to serve Krishna. So taking into account this family connection that Diti has with Sati, she realizes her mistake at promoting or instigating union at the improper time, and the result that such union would be. Now, this in itself is a very important point. I feel one of the real points of this particular verse. We have this saying here in the States, hindsight is 20/20. And it's an idiom that simply means that it's very easy to look at something after the fact with clearer vision than looking at it when it's taking place. 20/20 eyesight is perfect eyesight. So, you can look at something after it's happened and understand perfectly what it means. Excuse me, looking back at it like that. So this is the instructive point that we can gather from this, that even in the practice of devotional service, we may find ourselves engaging in activities that don't help us and may even, as their result, hurt us in the practice of our devotion, of our activities, of our service. So this is the case here with Diti. She's persuaded her husband, Kasyapa, to have union at a time that is not recommended. And now, hindsight's 20/20, after the fact, she's feeling regretful for doing so. There are rules and regulations that govern every aspect of our life in devotional service. And these also guide, instruct, and govern, for lack of a better word, our activities in each of the different ashrams. Every ashram, every varna has different responsibilities, different obligations, and they are not equal in each of them. Different personalities in different ashrams and in different varnas are going to have to responsibly execute activities according to their circumstance. The necessity of the householder to be accommodating to the opposite sex, whether the husband or wife, is something that we find unique to the Grihastha ashram. the sannyasis, the brahmacharis, the vanaprastras. Vanaprastras to some degree because they're not completely finished with their family connection, although they're retired. But particularly brahmacharis and sannyasis, they do not have this obligation. Matter of fact, they're restricted from this obligation. Polite, respectful. I remember Bhaktivishra Madhava Maharaj, back when we knew him as Ma Mantra, he was always very, very polite to the ladies, very respectful. You know, he was never condescending, always very respectful in that regards. Govinda Maharaj refers to my wife as, tell Ma that I send my obeisances. You know, he's always very respectful like that. So this is the nature of the relationship. Whereas in the householder ashram, the union between husband and wife is expected. It's necessary. I remember one time, quite some number of years ago, Satyaraj Prabhu was sharing with me one devotee, Madhava Maharaj, a completely different individual, was visiting in New York, Indian body, and not very well versed in much of the American ways of life. And this was before Satyaraj and his wife, Vrinda, had adopted this wonderful daughter they have. And so he said to Satyaraj, so you have some issue? And of course, in Indian language, to have some issue means you have some child. And at this point, Satyaraj had published, you know, 20 or 30 books, you know, and so issue, yeah, books. Oh, yeah, I have 20, 30 like that. And the sannyasi's eyes got very big. He was, what? So it's expected that in the householder ashram, there will be some children. And how those children are begotten is very practically and carefully guided. What time of day is best? What time of day is not best? As we look at the astrological breakdown of a day, there are different muhurtas. And those different muhurtas have positive and negative, you know, good and bad muhurtas, as they're called. Some times of the day are beneficial for doing A, B, and C. Some times of the day are beneficial for doing other things. Some times of the day are beneficial for doing nothing but chanting. So in this regards, there is a certain standard by which one conceives children. And Diti had overstepped this. And it's a practical point for us in our daily life and devotional service. The rules are there. They oversee, direct, and guide us in all different aspects of our life. And this is the understanding of what Varnashram Dharma is. According to where we're at, we have to accept certain things. Now, the thing about these guidelines is that they're not, if they're not followed, there's consequences. This is what guidelines means. I remember back when I was traveling with for Sacred Threads, I would do a trade show in Phoenix, Arizona quite often. And right near the hotel and hall where we were at, there was a place called Camelback Mountain. And Camelback Mountain, if you're into hiking, which I happen to be, Camelback Mountain is an amazing place to hike. And you get up early in the morning and take the trail up to the top and you catch the sunrise at the top of it. It's the highest point for, you know, miles and miles and miles. It's really quite wonderful. But it's climbing up over boulders, huge boulders. It's quite dangerous. Some of the elevations are almost 90 degrees. And so what they've done is they have these metal guidelines, metal railings. In some cases, it's even just loose chain to be able to grab onto to help you in your ascent. And if you use those, then your ascent is safe and successful. And if you go outside of those, there's every chance of serious danger, even death, because some of those drops are quite far. So this would be the consequence for not following those guidelines, those railings that are there for helping in our ascent. Similarly, these guidelines that we find given to us according to our ashram, according to our particular circumstance, are there to help with our ascent in the process of devotional service. Devotional service in and of itself is free from any material contamination. I was just reading the other day in Kavi Corner Post, Chaitanya Chandradaya, that the family of devotional personalities, there are in that family, it's quite a detailed, I don't think I have it right here. Anyway, quite a detailed list, and there were several daughters that were devotional service personified. Some of those daughters were in contact with the modes of material nature, and thus they did not produce any nectar in their activities. Some of those daughters, 10 in number, were not in contact with these modes, and they produced great nectar in the activities they performed. So similarly, in our efforts in devotional service, we have to endeavor not to come into contact with the modes of material nature, because they're everywhere. We're living entities. We have this body. We have this mind. Bhagavad Gita reminds us very clearly, struggling with the six senses, which include the mind. I remember there was one brahmachari when I was a younger devotee in St. Louis, and this devotee, you know, they say sometimes that you can tell a person by their face, and you could look at him and immediately know when he was in Maya. You know, and so you'd say, Prabhu, how's it going today? He'd go, oh, just wrestling with that old rascal mind. So some days, that's all we get, just wrestling with that old rascal mind. Other days, we're able to move up quite nicely. So by keeping ourselves insulated, by keeping ourselves protected, inoculated even, you could say, against the modes of material nature, by the careful execution of devotional service, we're free from that influence. But the consequences are there. I remember my father would always say that, you know. He'd give us a rule, give us a direction, tell us what we had to do. And then if, and as was, in the case we stepped outside of that rule, we'd have to pay the consequences. He was never angry when he dealt out that punishment. I remember it was always very clear. Okay, well, I told you this. You didn't do that, or you did that instead. So now this is the result. You get grounded, or you get a privilege taken away, whatever the case was. So there was a instruction, and there was a result for following or not following that instruction. So in this regard, this is the manner of union with one's spouse. The idea is to bring about a particular proper mentality at a proper time, so that the soul entering into the womb is an advanced soul that will have every opportunity to become free from the further entanglement in birth, death, old age, and disease. Union with the spouse at other times does not produce that. This is the case here with Diti. She has allowed her senses, she has allowed her desires to get the better of her judgment, and as a result, she's persuaded her husband to facilitate those desires, and the result, because the wrong time of facilitating those desires was taken up, is Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha. Now, sometimes as parents, we might look at our kids and go, oh my God, how did they, you know, because we just get exasperated with them. I mean, majority of the time, we're all very much in love with our children, but you know, occasionally we'll look and just go, you know, but I mean, imagine if your kids are Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha. It's all right, I just give up. Which is interesting because they were well based in Vedic knowledge. They understood, you know, I mean, the preaching that Hiranyakasipu did to the family members when Hiranyaksha was dispatched by Vraha, it was quite significant, you know. But at any rate, so she realizes after the fact that this was a mistake and that the result for this is not going to be very beneficial. So she wants to appease her brother-in-law, Lord Shiva. Why Lord Shiva? Very significant reason why. He's the personality in charge of the modes of ignorance. Mode of ignorance means doing something that is not beneficial, doing something that is irreligious, doing something against the injunction of Shastra. This is a mode of ignorance. So in the modes of ignorance, there are certain types of personalities, ghosts, demons, lower beings, hobgoblins, things of this nature. You know, and in our tradition, we don't deny these things. These are all beings that have subtle bodies. we understand that there's the physical, the subtle, and the spiritual realm of existence. So these personalities, they're in a lower mode. And the Lord over these personalities is Lord Shiva. He's untainted by their association, but he's there to guide and direct them. And the allotted time for the activities of these personalities is at twilight. Just like everyone is given some facility according to their circumstance. The dog in the backyard gets a little wooden house that's barely big enough for it to fit in and is perfectly happy. You know, it just sits out there, barks at anything that goes down the street. Dev and I live on a street where there's these two yappy little dogs that if a leaf goes by, they're out front yapping at it. You know, so dogs, that's that they're happy doing that. Ghosts, demons, hobgoblins, things of this nature, they have subtle bodies, and so they're given places to reside where they're not going to cause too much trouble. This is why you do a griha pravesha, because the house, if it's been built and is empty for some time, subtle beings take residence in there, so now they have to be removed. Different types of pujas are done like this. So the twilight is when these individuals are roaming around looking for some place to inhabit, namely the womb of a woman who's conceiving children at that time. So this is what has happened with Aditi and Kasyapa. So now it's additionally mentioned in this verse that Lord Shiva is very kind to the women, and that it's pretty much a standard in our tradition. Vaishnava also, we worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava, seek his blessings. But in traditional Hindu societies, it's pretty much the standard that the women would worship Lord Shiva to get a husband like Lord Shiva. He's an Ayudhu devotee. He's very calm in his nature. He's very just in his vision. And he's very devoted. Devoted not only to Vishnu, upon whom he's always in meditation on, but devoted to his partner, Parvati. This is the ideal husband. And being devoted means showing affection and being affectionate. This is the nature of an intimate relationship. There's some exchange of affection is there. Now, this is not always appreciated by everyone, as we see in the pastime from the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam of Chitraketu. Chitraketu was, you know, quite an elevated personality, but he came upon Lord Shiva and Parvati in an assembly of Lord Shiva's followers. And Lord Shiva had Parvati sitting on his lap with his arm around her waist. Very affectionate thing between a husband and wife, not at all uncommon. You know, hugging, embracing like that, this is standard. It's a way of showing affection, you know. So he saw this and he began to criticize Lord Shiva. Vaishnavanamita sambhu. Lord Shiva is the topmost of Vaishnava, so what business does anyone have criticizing him? Aside from the whole principle of we shouldn't criticize at all, even if we have a management position and there's a need to correct, it should be done in such a way that doesn't invoke criticism, but instruction. So at any rate, Chitraketu made these comments, questioning, criticizing, you know, slandering, we could say, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva has great potency. His dance at the end of the universe creates so much fire that the entire world is burned. So he could have reciprocated quite easily. But as we described here, he's very calm, very just. So he didn't do anything. However, Parvati was not so accommodating. We can see that sometimes the husband will be offended or criticized, and he may not do anything. Woe be unto that man that crosses the wife. There was a scenario in my own household some number of years ago. Someone made some, let's just say, unfortunate comments and rumors about me. And anyway, I just said, whatever you're going to do. But my wife, this person's name was not allowed to be mentioned in our home for quite some time. So, at any rate, the point being that Parvati, she didn't have anything nice to say about Chittaketu. As a matter of fact, as the Bhagavatam tells us, she says, Chittaketu is the lowest of Kshatriyas, for he has impudently overridden Brahma and other demigods by insulting Lord Shiva, upon whose lotus feet they always meditate. Lord Shiva is personified religion and the spiritual master of the entire world. Shiva has affectionately sitting with Parvati on his lap. That's you know the quotation. But I'm saying Shiva was affectionately sitting with Parvati on his lap. And so Chittaketu referred to her, as we would say in our American culture, as a henpecked husband, you know. Whether or not that phrase is appropriate isn't the issue. The fact of the matter is that affection between the husband and wife is required. This is how a relationship lasts forever. You know, you can't have a marriage of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years without some affection. You know, it's required. So in this way, we see that this is why Diti is approaching Shiva, because she knows he's very kind. He's very affectionate to family members, and I'm his family member. So maybe he'll forgive me, and then he won't let these demons take presence in my womb. So this is why Lord Shiva is approached, you know, by the ladies to get good husbands, good children, and a happy family life. This is the point for worshiping. Now, regarding the non-controversial line in the purport, Shiva knows very well the defective nature of women. This is not one of those lines that should be taken out of context. You know, I read in the Bhagavatam, women are defective. You know, it's not how this is meant. The defective nature noted here is the desire for sense gratification over religiosity. Who of us has not had that desire? Who of us has not been affected by that type of thinking? At one time or another, all of us are guilty of some activity that is not in line with our devotional actions. This is the nature of being in this world. And therefore, this is not a sentence that's applied to all women at all times, in all cases, in every situation. This is a general rule for those, women or not, who think themselves to be the body and think themselves to be the desires, and therefore act on that principle, which at this time is something Diti was quite guilty of. She had these desires. She wanted them fulfilled immediately. I don't care about the time. Let's, you know. And so now she understands that there is going to be this result because she didn't follow these guidelines. So she remembers her worshiping of Lord Shiva as a young girl and calls on him to be very kind to her. This is the encouragement that we have on the devotional path. As Krishna says in the Gita, there's no loss or diminution in any of our activities on the devotional path. So we chart this daily walk of devotional service, and we deal with the challenges and the obstacles. And if we are ultimately sincere in our efforts and honest about our shortcomings, we can expect and pray for the shelter of the Lord, whom we've worshipped sincerely throughout our life. This is, of course, the whole idea behind the training that we give to our children. I think I've told this before, but it's such a sweet story and so dear to my heart. When my granddaughter Revati was visiting us, she would have been about 4 years old. She was sitting at the little table we got for her, and she was doing some beading, just, you know, some beads on a string thing. And while she was beading, she was singing the Tulsi song. Namo, namo, Tulsi Krishna Parihasi, namo, namo, Radha Krishna Seva. So I walked in the room and I'm like, Revati, you know that song? And she looked at me as if I was just the greatest fool in the world. Well, of course I do, Grandpa, I'm a devotee. So, you know, and then my other young granddaughter, Dira, one of her favorite things during the month of Damodar is to stand in front of the fan and sing the Damodar prayers into the fan, because, you know, you get the, you know, like that. Like that. She gets a big smile and loves doing that. So these are activities that will be the foundation for later in their life. these will be the devotional principles that will carry them and keep them strong. Srila Prabhupada talks a great deal about this in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, particularly in the early chapters. First canto, 12th chapter, verse 30, he says in the purport, Srila Jiva Goswami remarks in this connection that every child, if given an impression of the Lord from their very childhood, certainly becomes a great devotee of the Lord like Maharaj Parikit. One may not be as fortunate as Maharaj Parikit to have had the opportunity to see the Lord in the womb of his mother. I mean, imagine that. You know, you're 9 months in there suffering. We know the descriptions in the Bhagavatam, but Krishna appears there. But even if one is not so fortunate, one could be made so if the parents of the child desire for them to be so. There is a practical example in my own personal life in this connection. My father was a pure devotee of the Lord. And when I was only 4 or 5 years old, my father gave me the forms of Radha and Krishna. In a playful manner, I used to worship these deities along with my sister. And I used to imitate the performances of the neighboring Radha Govinda temple. By constantly visiting this neighboring temple, and by copying the ceremonies in connection with my own deities of play, I developed a natural affinity for the Lord. My father used to observe all these ceremonies befitting my position. Later on, these activities were suspended due to my association in the schools and colleges, and I became completely out of practice. But in my youthful days, when I met my spiritual master, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, again I revived my old habit, and the same playful deities became my worshipable deities in proper regulation. This was followed up until I left the family connection, and I am pleased that my generous father gave the first impression, which was developed later into regulative devotional service by his divine grace. Maharaj Prahlad also advised that such impressions of a godly relation must be impregnated from the beginning of childhood. Otherwise, one may miss the opportunity of the human form of life, which is very valuable, although it is temporary, like others. So this is a very important guideline for us. Instead of become discouraged by verses or sections of the Bhagavatam like this, where there's a very clear reaction to something that was inadvertently done. Rather, we should become encouraged that the Lord is ultimately kind to his devotees, that the Lord ultimately remembers the activities of his devotees, and that even, Prabhupada said, even if we cannot remember Krishna, at the time of death, Krishna will remember us. So I think this is the important thing that we can carry away from this verse today. We also wanted to speak today about Govinda Ghosh. Govinda Ghosh is a very, very important associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Govinda Ghosh had two brothers, Madhava and Vasudeva, and these three are incarnations of particular wonderful gopis that were very, very dear to the Lord. They were known during Mahaprabhu's Leela as particularly being ruby-throated, the word is used, because they were wonderful at singing kirtan. The Rath Yatra ceremony, as Mokya mentioned, the Rath Yatra ceremony was broken up into different kirtan groups. And these brothers each took a group and were leading the kirtan in these different groups. Their home village was in Srihatta, and this was where they resided with their father and mother. And after the father passed away, they moved to Navadvip. And there in Navadvip is when their relationship and association with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came into manifesting. Now, as with many of Mahaprabhu's senior associates, they were from a Kayasta family, a lower class family. But nonetheless, they were very, very honored and respected because they completely devoted themselves to Mahaprabhu. They, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur notes that they were from the Madhurya Rasa and ultimately had a more intimate relationship during Krishna Lila. They were part of Shivananda Sen's group that would go each year for Rath Yatra. It wasn't that they only went 1 year. That's an amazing thing about those devotees at that time. You know, it's a month to travel from Navadvip to Puri, a month to travel back. This is all by foot. No rail or car or plane at the time. And then 4 months in there, so basically 6 month vacation. You know, I mean, wow, it's just amazing. Now, Govinda Ghosh himself was instrumental in bestowing unlimited mercy on Srinivas Acharya. And that's a whole another story, which you don't really have so much time for going into today. These three brothers together were considered to be very important branches of the tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of the three, Madhava Ghosh was the more expert, if you could do it in a category, of kirtaniers. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made his request of Nityananda to please not come to Rath Yatra every year, which Nityananda ultimately didn't even follow. Nityananda is completely independent. But when he made that request, he requested that Madhava and Vasudeva would return to Bengal with Nityananda. But Govinda Ghosh stayed with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and served him very, very intimately, very closely. And this brought great, great satisfaction to him. He was quite happy for this. Mahaprabhu was touring in Orissa, visiting different places, and they stopped one day for lunch, and he turned to Govinda, his servant, after the meal, and he said, "You have some haritaki." Haritaki is like tambu or some breath freshener, something to freshen the mouth up and help with the digestion. Every morning after I worship Gary Raj, I offer him some little contents like this, some dates soaked in rose water and wrapped in silver, and some sugar balls and anise candy and things like that all together. So Mahaprabhu asked Govinda, "Do you have some?" Well, Govinda didn't have any, but I'll just one moment, I'll find. So he went throughout the local village, found one household that had, "Okay, can I please have?" Then gave him. And he thought, "Mahaprabhu will ask for this again tomorrow. I should save some. So can I have a little extra?" So he kept it. So the next day, Mahaprabhu finished his meal and he turned to Govinda, "You have some haritaki?" "Oh yeah, I have right here." Mahaprabhu took, was very satisfied. After the meal was finished, Mahaprabhu called Govinda, said, "Previously when I asked for this, you had to spend some time finding and locating. But when I asked today, you had it right there." He said, "Yes, I found some and so I stored it to have for you the next day." He said, "Oh." He said, "This mentality of keeping things for the next day, this is good for a householder who's maintaining someplace, not good for a renunciate. So you stay here and establish a temple here." Govinda was not so happy by this instruction, but nonetheless, he did stay there and he established a temple. And, you know, in this way, he had to figure out, you know, what deity to install. So during the next morning, he was taking his bath in the Ganga, and some object was floating down the river and bumped into his back. Now, those of you that have bathed in the Ganga know that there could be any number of objects that float down the Ganga and bump into you, some of them less favorable than others maybe. But it was a considerably heavy item. And so he got it onto the shore, and then that night he had a dream in which a carver had appeared and carved this into a deity for him to worship. So in this way, you know, this became the deity that he worshiped. Now, Mahaprabhu said to him, he said, "You know, this deity that you have, this is the deity of Gopinath, and you will worship him." So given the responsibility to establish a temple, given the opportunity of having a form of the deity carved, and given the instruction of Mahaprabhu, this became his guiding light, his guideline, as we could say. So Govinda Ghosh is a very important personality in this way. after the eventually he married, had a son, and that son passed away very young. And he was very, very much distraught to the point that he stopped worshiping Gopinath. So 2-3 days went by and Gopinath came to him. You're not worshiping me? You know? Oh, I've lost my son. How can I go on? You've lost one son. You want to lose a second one? You know? Gopinath was looking at him like that. I'm your son. You know? You have to at least take care of me. Oh, what will I gain by serving you? Who'll do my... Are you going to come forward when I die and do the Shraddha ceremony for me? My only son, who would be the one to do the Shraddha, has passed away. You say you're my son. Are you going to do the Shraddha? And Gopinath said, of course I will. I promise you I'll do that. All right, then I'll feed you. So in that way, Gopinath overcame his grief and went back to his service. And in due course of time, when Govindadas disappeared from this world, the deity was given Kusa grass ring, which is worn by the Yajamana, by the son, at the time of performing the Shraddha ceremony for the father. So to this day, when the anniversary, which is today of the disappearance of Govinda Ghosh, takes place, Gopinath is given a Kusa ring. So I don't see one on our Shyam Sundar, but at any rate, so this is a little bit how intimate and close Govinda Ghosh was with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Govinda Ghosh has one song he's written here, which I'll close with. O people of Navadvip, and whom are you staring? Spread your arms to stop Gora. Make him come back. Do not let him leave. Who is there now who will clasp you to their chest? Who will come and beg you to take love of Krishna and chant? A shaft has now pierced my heart. The image of my life has abandoned Navadvip and gone to Puri. No longer will I be able to sit with Gauranga. No longer will I be able to enjoy kirtan with him the way we did. All the devotees are crying. Their hearts are bursting. But like a stone, Govinda Ghosh does not join them in crying. So this was one of his songs of separation on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we'll finish there for today. There's a couple of short questions or corrections or guidelines.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the very nice class. The personal anecdotes I find very sweet, especially the granddaughter Revati's incredulous comment is precious. I have a triple question for you. They're really simple and quickie answers. But first, I'd like to make a comment. This statement about by Sati about the faulty nature of women, remember, it's Diti is saying it herself.
Yes.
And let's remember that throughout Bhagavatam, there's hundreds of shlokas by prayers by men stating the faulty nature of men and the jiva illusory thinking that he's a male. And so just to balance it out, you know, we have both genders telling how fallen they are because they're both in illusion. So, quickie question. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they're twins?
So
in the womb at the same time?
Yeah.
They're twins.
Yeah.
And how long was the pregnancy? Wasn't it like really long? 100 years. Okay.
Yeah.
And the third question is, when they were born, did the couple in question, before they were born, did the couple in question know that the demons are in the womb?
I seem to understand, that Bhagavatam describes that they realize, this is why Diti's trying to get Lord Shiva to appease, because she knows that this was the wrong time, and the personalities entering wombs at that time are not going to be of the best background. And that's why she doesn't know them by the name Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, but she knows, you know, as we might say, all hell's coming forward.
So for 100 years during the pregnancy, the parents are thinking, oh my God, these demons are going to be born. You know, how are we going to raise them? And how much trouble are they going to give us? Were they in anxiety or were they calm because it's the Lord's pastime?
I can't cite the state of mind of Kasyapa and Diti during that 100 years. Neither does the Bhagavatam give full description of their state of mind. But we can, as parents, we can understand, there's some anxiety there.
Now, you're a parent, so when children are born, Do you pick the name beforehand, or do you like see the child's characteristic and give it a
According
name?
According to Shastra, there's four different ways of picking the name of a child. One is by the first syllable of the constellation they're born under.
Oh.
The second is by the first syllable of the muhurta they're born under. The third is by the corresponding name of Vishnu for the time they are born. And the fourth is by popular or family choice. Those are the four directions given in Shastra for how to pick a name for a child.
Okay, because I'm speculating that the babies are born, so Hiranyaksha, gold, Hiranyaksha, eyes. So he might have had, like, yellow pupils.
You're allowed that speculation. I can't confirm it one way or the other.
And before the name-giving ceremony.
They say I will not confirm or deny.
And the other baby... Maybe before the name-giving ceremony, they're observing the nature. So like when they do that thing, pick the shastra or the gold, maybe he chose the gold.
I don't have a clue. That's not indicated in the Bhagavatam either. All right. We'll finish there for today. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Govinda Ghosh. And all glories to the tablet gods.